Good afternoon, everyone. This is the Thursday, October 1st, 2020 afternoon session of the Portland City Council. Good evening, Keelan, please call the roll.
Good afternoon, Hugh Daly. Fritz.
Here.
Ryan.
Here.
Hardesty. Wheeler.
Here. Under Portland City Code and State Law, the City Council is holding this meeting electronically. All members of the council are attending remotely by video and teleconference, and the city has made several avenues available for the public to listen to the audio broadcast of this meeting. The meeting is available to the public on the city's YouTube channel, eGovPDX, www.portlandoregon.gov/video, and channel 30. The public can also provide written testimony to the council clerk by emailing councilclerk@ccTestimony@portlandoregon.gov. The council is taking these steps as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic, which is a threat to the safety and health and well-being of the community, and therefore we are maintaining physical distancing. We thank everybody for their continued patience and understanding as we navigate through these challenges to conduct the city's business. We'll now hear the rules of order and decorum from legal counsel.
Good afternoon, Council. To participate in Council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the Council Clerk's Office for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or first readings of ordinances. The published Council agenda at portlandoregon.gov/auditor contains information about how and when you may sign up for testimony while Council is holding electronic meetings. Your testimony today should address the matter being considered. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When your time is up, presiding officer will ask you to conclude. Disruptive conduct such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being placed on hold or from the remainder of the electronic meeting. And please be aware that all council meetings are recorded. Thank you.
Thank you. The first item today is item number 787, please, Keelan.
Appoint Amanda Squiemfin-Yazzi to the Portland Clean Energy Community Benefits Fund Committee for the balance of current committee member Andrea Hamburg's term to expire on November 7th, 2021.
The fires and smoke that ravaged our state over these past couple of weeks have underscored the urgency of addressing our climate emergency. And as we seek to recover and rebuild from the pandemic and its economic consequences, to address all of these challenges in a way that make our city more resilient and equitable. In that context, I'm happy to introduce this next council agenda item. It's the appointment of Amanda Squiemfin-Yazzi to the Portland Clean Energy Fund Committee. As I've noticed in the past, PCEF is a beacon and a testament to our community's belief in doing things in a different way, and it's a model for the rest of the nation. It demonstrates how we can connect the dots between climate and racial justice and build shared economic prosperity and a green economy. It captures city and community collaboration at its best, and the PCEF committee is core to that collaboration. When we seated the committee last November, we knew that it was the most diverse, powerful, thoughtful, and talented committee that we'd put together. But it was missing a critical perspective that we overlook far too often, and that's Indigenous people. I want to thank Andrea Hamburg, who decided to resign from her position on the PCEF committee to make space for an Indigenous perspective. As other committee members have noted, this act was a true expression of equity. Next, I'll turn it over to the PCEF program manager, Sam Barrasso, and committee member, Maria Sippen, to speak about their process and introduce Amanda. We will then take action on Amanda's appointment. As PCEF released its first inaugural RFP last week, Sam will close out the agenda item with a few updates about the program. Hello, Sam.
Hi. Thank you, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Sam Barrasso,
and I'm the program manager for the Portland Clean Energy Fund. I want to thank you for having us here today, and I thank the City Council, but especially the Mayor and our Commissioner in charge now, Commissioner Hardesty. For all the reasons noted by the Mayor, this is an incredibly important moment in our evolution of the Portland Clean Energy Fund and the City. In a short bit, I will briefly speak about the PCF Committee's roles and functions before passing the presentation off to Maria Sippen, a current committee member, who will speak to the committee deliberations and introduce Amanda. But before I do that, I would like to introduce Laura John, the City's Tribal Relations Director, to share a few relevant reflections. Laura, are you with us?
Thank you, Sam. Hello, Mayor Wheeler and members of City Council. My name is Laura John. I'm the Tribal Relations Director for the City of Portland. My position resides in the Office of Government Relations. I also want to state that I'm a descendant of the Blackfeet and Seneca Nations. Thank you, Mayor, for calling attention to the missed opportunity at the inaugural formation of the PCF committee with regard to the absence of a Native American committee member. As you all know, the Portland Clean Energy Fund was a community-led, community-driven approved initiative that was overwhelmingly supported by Portland voters. In particular, Portland voters saw that the BIPOC communities historically have not seen the benefits of the sustainability and clean energy movement. I would say that experience is doubly so for the Native community and for Indian country in general, as well as Indigenous people globally. I appreciated that from the very beginning of the initiative work that the Native American community was involved in providing input through the work of Carrie Waters at the Native American Youth and Family Center. I want to publicly thank Carrie for her work that she did, which, by the way, for those of you that don't know, Carrie is now a city employee at PBOT. It's very clear that it's vitally important to include the Indigenous voice in this type of work, particularly because of the disproportionate impact that Indigenous people face due to climate change globally. This includes the loss of land because of rising sea levels. It includes toxins being dumped in their backyards and other various ways in which climate action is impacting their ability to uphold their cultural traditions and teachings and ways of life. The city has made a commitment to uphold that ability of Native people to continue to practice their cultural ways and to protect treaty reserve cultural resources such as salmon, lamprey, and steelhead. So it's vitally important to have this voice, not only to speak for the Native community in determining how the PCF funding will be distributed, but also to bring in that lens of how climate change is impacting Indigenous people, and particularly for PCF because of where we're located, the tribes in the region. I want to thank the PCF committee for inviting me to have a discussion with them around how to include the Indigenous voice, because there wasn't an Indigenous member on the committee. Doing so allowed for this conversation to occur about that missing voice. I would say that after that discussion, I felt heavy and somewhat sad that there wasn't, I saw representation of every other community, Black, Asian, Latinx, female represented, and unfortunately didn't see a Native voice at that table. The outcome of what happened after that discussion, I could have never imagined would have occurred. I want to also recognize Andrea Hamburg's decision to open her seat for the inclusion of a Native community member. To my knowledge, this is the first time that this act has happened for a member of the Native community. This action demonstrates the committee's genuine and meaningful commitment to the equity and inclusion of voices and narratives that are often overlooked. I fully support the appointment of Amanda to the PCF committee for many reasons. In my professional and personal interactions with Amanda, what I have witnessed is an individual who is overwhelmingly passionate and committed to addressing racial, gender, and accessibility issues. She has a keen lens for that, and she's not afraid to speak up. And I think that is going to bring just some such value to the PCF committee. Lastly, I wanted to say that this action by PCF, in fact, supports the Declaration, United Nations Declaration of Rights of Indigenous People. That declaration states that Indigenous peoples have the right to maintain and strengthen their distinct political, legal, economic, social, and cultural institutions while retaining their right to fully participate, if they so choose, in the political, economic, social, and cultural life of the state. Article 29 of that declaration also says that Indigenous peoples have the right to the conservation and protection of the environment and the productive capacity of their lands and territories and resources. So thank you, PSUF Committee, for taking this action, and thank you, Council, for inviting me to speak today.
Thank you, Director John.
All right, thank you. So with that, I'd like to ask Keely if you can turn up our presentation here so I can speak a little bit about the committee. Great, thank you. Okay, let's go to the next slide. Next slide. All right. And so what I'll just speak to is this next slide that's going to show up, and it's just a little background context, and it's a note for those of us that are new on the City Council with us. But the Portland Clean Energy Fund is about investing in climate action that advances racial and social justice. It was passed in November 2018 by 65% of Portland voters, and it is Oregon's first environmental measure created and led by communities of color. It is, in fact, also the nation's first climate fund created and led by communities of color. When it's fully implemented, it'll spin off about $46 million for clean energy investments in Portland. And it's funded by a gross receipts tax on sales by corporations with over $1 billion in national sales and $500,000 in Portland sales is what that should actually be. Next slide. Advance when you can. Advance one more slide. This is what I'm going to just speak to is how the funds are accessed in the next slide. There we go. So the funds, nonprofits access the funds and are the primary accessors of the funds. They submit proposals to the Portland Clean Energy Fund program, and there is a scoring panel that will be evaluating those proposals. The scoring panels will be comprised of staff, committee members, as well as technical experts. And then those scores will go to the committee, which you have pictured here in the middle, so beautifully pictured here in the middle of the screen. The committee ultimately will make the funding recommendations and send those off to City Council. And I'll speak to a little timeline of what we expect here in the inaugural RFP or request for proposals here later. And then it goes to City Council. Okay, next. So the core responsibilities of the Portland Clean Energy Fund Committee is to make the final funding recommendations to City Council, to make recommendations on changes to the city code, to make whatever necessary changes to ensure the effectiveness of the program in meeting its stated goals, to evaluate applications, and to review our performance and report to the public as well as City Council on the performance of the fund in meeting its goals. Also unique to the structure of this committee that was part of the structure that was passed by voters is that they get to nominate their replacements. And the mayor, absent good cause, appoints their replacement, which brings us to why we are here today. And so what I'll do with that is I will introduce Maria Sippen, one of our esteemed committee members who served on the recruitment subcommittee that recommended Amanda be appointed by the committee, or nominated by the committee and appointed by City Council. Maria will share a bit about those discussions before introducing Amanda and giving her an opportunity to speak. And I think we can actually suspend the slide for a little bit here, let folks see each other.
Thank you, Sam, and thank you, Laura, for speaking today. Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Maria Sippen, Portland Clean Energy Fund Committee member. I'm honored to speak to you all today about PSEF member recruitment completed by my peers, Michael Edenhill, Megan Horst, and me, with help from city staff and tribal and Indigenous community members to elevate the urgency and significance of appointing someone to this PSEF seat, but also working toward justice and building solidarity through this transformative work. Our committee reviewed several outstanding applications, many from people whose lived experiences and commitment to climate justice make them more than qualified. One candidate, Amanda Squimfem-Yazzi, stood out for her action-oriented advocacy work rooted here in Portland and statewide. Her expertise includes grassroots efforts and social work. please get to know Amanda and all that she brings to PSEF and beyond. I'm so honored to recommend her for PSEF. Amanda?
Thank you, Maria. Mayor Wheeler and commissioners, my name is Amanda Squimfignazzi, and I am incredibly honored to be sharing space with you all. And I just really want to honor the sacrifices that brought me up to this point, from Andrea to the many individuals who fought long and hard for PSEF to exist and be implemented. I want to thank Laura John for her advocacy to have an Indigenous voice at the table. I want to thank Sam for just being a wonderful voice to be able to help me through this entire process. And like Laura mentioned, Carrie Waters. Carrie has always been a major mentor to someone like me. I met Carrie through the NAIA LEAD program, and she sat down with me, and she was the very first person who introduced PSEF to me. And from that moment, she taught me how to gather signatures. She taught me how to speak about PSEF. She taught me how to just do a bunch of stuff around PSEF. And if it wasn't for Carrie, I honestly would not be here. And I just, again, want to say thank you to every single person, every individual who put their time and hearts and passion into making this all possible. And of course, I want to thank my ancestors for allowing me to be here today. And yeah, thank you so much, everyone.
Thank you, Ms. Scrimple-Miazzi. And we're so appreciative of your willingness to step forward and serve. Thank you.
I think we were looking to send it back to you all now for action, and then I've got a brief update after you take action on where we stand in terms of PSEF implementation.
All right, thank you, Sam. And we know that representation here matters very much in the way that the city does business. And we know that no one committee or body can possibly represent all of Portland, but we really have to strive to do better. And I want to thank Andrea Hamburg again, and welcome Amanda onto the PSEF committee. We're really excited about the good work that's going to be done going forward. And with that, colleagues, I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
All right, we'll say that Commissioner Ryan moved and
second.
Udaly has seconded.
I had my mute button covered up. Sorry,
everybody. Yeah, I got all the time. Totally understandable. I do that all the time. So we have a motion. We have a second. Keelan, please call the roll. Now Keelan's muted.
Oh, no.
Sorry about that. I, too, am having troubles with mute. Okay, you daily.
Well, it's already been said, but I want to say it myself. I want to thank Andrea Hamburg for her service on the PSEF Community Benefits Committee and her graciousness in deciding to step down for other perspectives and experiences to be represented. Amanda, welcome. As you can tell, we are very excited that you've decided to share your time with PSEF and the city. You bring professional and lived experience that is going to be so vitally important for the Clean Energy Fund to be a success. And I'm really looking forward to your contributions as part of the committee. Very happy to vote aye.
Fritz?
Well, first of all, Amanda, your name is better than mine. The first one is I think I've enjoyed it my whole life, but your last one is much more interesting than mine. So that's a bit flippant. I was really moved by what you said, particularly about Carrie Waters, who's started her career at the city in my office and then went on to greater things and is now back with the city. And so it's good to hear that people are encouraged and help each other succeed. And your appointment to this committee is really significant. There are no other committees that get to allocate that amount of money, and that the council will be taking your recommendations. So an enormous responsibility as well as an enormous privilege. And I know that you will do a good job rooted in the values of you. your people and of what you bring to the committee. So thank you for that. Thank you, Laura John, for engaging and for acknowledging the genuine response to the PSEF committee. And thank you to the PSEF committee. Really astonishing and wonderful work. And I look forward to when you bring the allocations, the first set of allocations. I don't know if that's going to happen while I'm still on the council, but I will certainly be following the process. And I'm very grateful for the work that you're all doing. It's a lot of work, but let's be very clear. So thank you all for volunteering your time and for the dedication and the good heart that you put into it. Because as we even with the amount of money that you have to allocate, we know that there will be tough choices to make and that some people will not be able to be funded, at least initially. So that is a hard decision to have to make, and we appreciate that you're engaging with the council, who will also have to make hard decisions. Congratulations and welcome. Aye.
Ryan.
Yes. It's the end of my second week of onboarding, and there's been a lot of information. This is, I learned by storytelling, and this was great storytelling. The fact that we're here right at this moment, saying yes to you, Amanda, and the way that Laura and others laid out the story was really beautiful. So I'm really pleased. And also just to dig a little bit into how active you are. And so thank you for adding this to your array of responsibilities and duties. And you and you're a Portland State alum, which is great. You're a board member of Next Up Oregon, East County Rising, and the Oregon Indian Education Association. So we're really grateful that you're also extending your service to the city of Portland for PSEP. So I'm thank you.
Wheeler.
Well, again, Amanda, thank you so much for stepping forward and providing important leadership to this incredible community-based initiative. I'm very happy to support this. I vote aye. The report is adopted. And Amanda, the appointment's approved. Welcome aboard and congratulations. Next up, Sam, we all are excited to see the inaugural request for PSEP proposals that are going to be released soon. Will you please give us a brief update on where things are currently?
All right. Keelan, if you can tee up the slides once more, we will be at slide number 6, but if not, that's okay too. All right, so, and I'll just start chatting away there. All right, go to slide 6, 2 more if you can. There we go. So just as a reminder, and I'll start with, you know, as you all know, the full committee was seated by City Council last November 2019. So the release of the inaugural request for proposals, and I should have acknowledged this, Mayor, it happened actually now, as notes have changed, 2 weeks ago, is a monumental feat. Getting there reflects thousands of volunteer hours to get PSEP passed the ballot, over 30 public committee meetings, hundreds of stakeholder meetings, and staff working countless nights and weekends to implement what will be a model locally and nationally for city-community collaboration on climate justice. The inaugural request for proposals is $8.6 million. And the funding areas that those will be able to touch are clean energy programs. These are energy efficiency, renewable energy investments in the commercial space, in the residential space, in the multifamily space. This will also revolve around workforce and contractor development in the green trades, and the sustainable trades, and the clean energy trades, making sure we have a significantly more diverse group of people working on these projects and representing the workforce of the clean energy workforce of the future. About 10 to 15% of the funding will go towards green infrastructure. So this is sustainable ag projects. These are, green infrastructure, these are street trees, green roofs, bioswales, the things that are green in the soil that sequester carbon, as well as urban ag projects. And then there's a set aside 5% for innovation, things that don't neatly directly fall into those other categories. All right, next slide. So this more captures what you'll expect to see in terms of those funding areas as part of the inaugural request for proposals. Again, it was $8.6 million. It was released on September 16th, and it will close on November 16th. Once it closes, we will conduct eligibility review, technical analysis, final committee review before we anticipate sending the final proposals to you all in February 2021. This year, applicants will be able to apply for one of three types of grants: planning grants, small grants, or large grants. And those are sort of captured in here in this diagram. But we've also recently, in July, released a little early set of funds, which are application support grants. We had a release of $200,000 application support grant. In August, we announced 41 of the organizations that received that funding. And while we're in the process of signing those grant agreements this week, I can say that well over three quarters of the grants that went to organizations that serve Black or Indigenous community, or the Black or Indigenous community. So it's a phenomenal start to the program and should bolster our excitement for what's to come. Let's go to the next slide. And this just speaks to a little bit of some of the things we're doing to get the word out about the request for proposal of the application. So what I'll do is I'll be following up early next week with just additional materials so that you all, in your capacity of folks that are well-connected in the community, can continue helping get the word out about this RFP being out and open. And so this is just, this reflects some of the work that we as staff are doing. And so we're excited to see the community's greatest and best ideas for climate change and advancing racial and social justice come through. I think I can cap this off, and maybe if folks have any questions, but otherwise we will let you be, and I will follow up with your chiefs of staff with just additional information or report on content that may be helpful for you all.
Thanks, Sam.
Next slide.
I
don't think this detail is needed unless you all have questions, but let's go to the next slide. Thank you.
Great. Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you. This is, I'm glad that you gave that briefing as to what was going to happen. So I won't be here when the first allocations come back in February. I wanted to raise a suggestion that hopefully over time could be incorporated into the process. And that is, one of there's been two constants over my 12 years here. One has been dogs in parks and the waste, and that is obviously not part of your purview, but the other one is leaf blowers. And we all remember that one of the last things Commissioner Fish did was to require the parks and other city staff to use electric leaf blowers rather than gas-powered leaf blowers, and that was intended to be a first step. Now, I haven't checked with the Senator Lawrence in Mayor Wheeler's office, who worked on this also with Commissioner Fish. I received complaints during the smoke emergency of people using leaf blowers, and I was absolutely astonished because I didn't even like to go to the mailbox, never mind to be outside. And then my neighbors, landscapers, were working during the smoke emergency. They appeared to be Latinx people, and they were, again, using leaf blowers. And I thought to myself, how desperate must you be to put money to put food on the table to be out in a smoke emergency and to be using a gas powered leaf blower? So I'm hoping that at some point the PSEF funds might be available for helping BIPOC contractors and landscape workers and others who might need assistance to convert to electric leaf blowers. When we required the garbage hauling trucks to switch to natural gas, we allowed them to increase the rates so that they were able to cover that. So we provided the funding. So I just wanted to make that suggestion and request. I think that would be really great to, I mean, we'd still get the complaints about the noise, but at least we would know that they weren't emitting enough pollution to drive an F-150 from here to New York in just a half an hour. Just my plea and my suggestion.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. Any further questions? All right. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Amanda. Thank you all for your leadership. Thank you for the excellent update. We'll look forward to continued success. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioners. Thank you, Mayor.
The next item, Carla, is 778.
Consider appeal by Leonard Giannette, Yvonne Meekums, and Mary Henry Day Tisson against the Design Commission's decision to approve with conditions the Alamo Manhattan four-block development in the South Waterfront Subdistrict of the Central City Plan District, LU 20-102914 DZM ADGW.
Thank you for that, Keelan. We all received new evidence, rebuttal to the new evidence during the open record period. As a reminder, the record closed for new evidence on September 24th. Additionally, I want to make it clear for the record that the attorneys for the applicant and appellant are on the Zoom call as panelists. They have the ability to unmute themselves at any time if they wish to object to anything during today's proceedings, and we encourage them to do that if necessary. To help us make a decision, staff are here to remind us of the options that are available to council.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm going to share my screen to show a slide that explains your options today. I'll leave it up for 1 minute just to give you a chance to read it. I also want to note that if council would like to see any of the material and plans that the applicant had or any material submitted during the open record period, I have them available and am able to share my screen.
Thank you. So we will begin our discussion. Anybody want to jump in? Commissioner Fritz, thank you.
Thank you, Stacey. I appreciate the putting the that up. So that the choices are to deny the appeal and uphold the Design Commission's decision, deny the appeal and modify the decision with conditions in allowing the applicant's revisions outlined above, and grant the appeal thereby overturning the Design Commission's decision to approve with conditions. And in this case, the project would be denied. And just so my colleagues know, last week we had a different appeal hearing in which we remanded the application back to the Design Commission. I'm informed that that is not an option in this case. So thank you for sharing the screen, Stacey. If you could put the faces back up and then I can figure out. There we go. Thank you. That's very helpful. So I am really concerned about that. Well, first of all, I appreciate the changes. I believe that from the beginning to the end, there has been some significant improvements. However, I believe that the application fails to meet the applicable design guidelines and goals. So let's deal first with the two modifications that are requested. These are kind of minor details, so I just want to get them out the way. Modifications are where a proposal doesn't meet applicable standards, but the application can show that the purpose of the standard is better met by the proposal. The first modification was the vehicle parking to allow two parking spaces to be stacked tandem without having an attendant on site. And the purpose statement is to promote vehicle areas that are safe and attractive for motorists and pedestrians. Vehicle area locations are restricted in some zones to promote the desired character of the zones. I have some written testimony that I will put into the record. And this was something that, although Commissioner Hardesty was not able to be here with us today, she was really concerned about about having any parking. So the findings for whether this development better meets the applicable design guidelines and the purpose statement is that the tandem stalls allow for greater vehicle density to be parked in a smaller amount to develop footprint. This finding assumes that more parking and greater vehicle density are desirable. The purpose statement addresses pedestrians and transit users. More parking is not desired in this location when none is required. Allowing more cars will increase vehicle-pedestrian conflicts. This approval criterion is not met and the tandem parking modification must be denied. The second modification request is to reduce the minimum width of bicycle parking spaces from the required 2 feet to 18 inches. And the purpose statement is that these standards ensure that required bicycle parking is designed so that bicycles may be securely locked without undue inconvenience and will be reasonably safeguarded from intentional or accidental damage. And the finding says that the proposed functional and space efficient system better meets the design guidelines because it eases floor plan demands in the development. But this finding doesn't address the purpose statement of the bicycle standards, which is that the bicycles may be securely locked without undue inconvenience. My husband's bike, which still sits in my garage, has handlebars that are 20 inches wide. It would be inconvenient to park such a bike in an 18-inch space, and doing so might incur accidental damage. The findings say that the spacing has been approved elsewhere in the city, and that's not an approval criteria. It can be assumed that residents and tenants will have familiarity with the rack system. That's not an approval criteria. This application is audacious in its picking and choosing of which rules apply based on the date of multiple applications. The code currently specifies 24 inches as the required width of long-term bicycle parking. Reducing this standard by 25% does not equally or better serve the purpose of the standard, and the standard is not met. Although the city is considering changing the standard width, they haven't. And the fact that routine modifications are routinely accepted doesn't justify approving something that doesn't meet the approval criteria. So those are the two small issues. The larger issues, more significant, obviously, are the design, height, massing, and greenway approval criteria. And the application fails to meet Central City Plan design goals 3, 6, and 9, which are to enhance the character of the Central City's district, provide for a rich and diverse pedestrian experience for pedestrians, and ensure that new development is at a human scale and that it relates to the scale and desired character of its setting and the Central City as a whole. The proposed design fails to enhance the character of the South Waterfront District, especially with respect to the Greenway guidelines. And most of my concerns are with the Greenway guidelines. The area between the buildings and the river, and the height, mass, and length of the southern building in particular, looming over the minimum required Greenway width, doesn't provide for a rich, pleasant, and diverse pedestrian experience for pedestrians, especially considering it will also be the front yard for 1,200 units. The heights adjacent to the Greenway and very close to them are not in human scale and don't relate to the scale and desired character of the setting. So the southern development touches the minimum Greenway provided, and the applicant's own illustrations show how the Greenway is pinched at the southeast corner. The Design Commission's approval includes bonus height due to the application providing more than the minimum required open space. The plaza, patio, and overlook are too small to serve 1,200 families, let alone welcome in the public. The distinction between private and public space is unclear, and there's insufficient visual connection between the open spaces and the river. This is the Willamette Greenway, a statewide treasure as well as a beloved local amenity. We should expect an exemplary Greenway public space when the bonus is awarded, rather than just above the minimum. The bonus height contributes to the sense of crowding and encroachment on the Greenway at the southern end. So I did review all of the changes that have been submitted, and the area outside the makerspaces can't be constructed as promised in the applicant's application's final amendments. It's required to integrate barrier-free design, integrate access systems for all people with the building's overall design concept. The wheelchair access to the area outside the makerspace from the Greenway is not convenient, and the steps will be challenging for people experiencing mobility disabilities. In amendments after the hearing, the applicants chose to address comments and concerns by council that the railings on the patio area create the impression of private space by removing the railings. This doesn't comply with building code standards. My communications director, Yesenia Carrillo, will now share the illustration submitted to the record. So if you could do that, please, Yesenia. The first one shows 6 steps up from the grade to the, hang on a second. Yes, it shows 6 steps. Oh no, hang on a second. This is very difficult to talk back and forth. Hang on a second, sorry. So you can see the 6 steps up from the grade to the patio outside the maker spaces. I have 3 kinds of steps in my home, inside and out it, each constructed by a different company. The rise on each is about 6 inches, so 6 steps is a rise of 36 inches. This is more than the 30 inches in rise requiring guardrails in the building code. Even if the rise is at or just under 30 inches, this proposed design would be hazardous without railings. You can see a person could roll or walk between the benches and fall off the overhang in this illustration, which was submitted by the applicant. Next slide, please. This problem is also illustrated in by the applicant's illustration showing a child about to run off the edge by the stormwater planter on the Greenway. Next slide, please. and the next one showing a person with long light hair and red shirt apparently about to fall off backwards. Railings will be required, making statements by council at a hearing that the makerspace seem private still pertinent. The building is simply too close to the greenway. Moving the facade back would allow more grading outside the minimum greenway setback area, which would remove the need, really remove the need for railings on the patio around the makerspace and also adequately mitigate the bonus height. Now, it could be said that the railing is a building code standard and will be evaluated at the building permit stage. Well, the design was deemed to be unwelcoming and seeming private by the council last week. So simply removing the, if the railings can't be removed because of the building code, the application doesn't comply with the applicable standards. Thank you, Yesenia. The proposed buildings are discordant with other developments on the Greenway and don't help unify or connect individual buildings or different areas. The lack of setback from the Greenway in the southeast corner doesn't integrate ecological concepts, despite claiming bonus height for the additional open space in the plaza outside the Greenway setback on Abernethy. While adhering to the maximum allowed width, the southern building doesn't reflect the pattern of waterfront developments, which are noticeably skinny and perpendicular to the river rather than broad and parallel to it. There's a minor concern about guideline A42, which is integrate stormwater management systems in the development. This says to integrate innovative stormwater management systems with the overall site and development designs. I do appreciate the amendments to add eco-roofs where the initial designs showed hard surface. I'm still dismayed that the roofs include artificial turf, particularly for the proposed dog runs. Fake turf grass is hot in summer and requires watering for cleaning and proper functioning. Even at Providence Park for soccer games, summer use of artificial turf requires frequent watering to make it functional before and after halftime soccer games. Unlike real grass, artificial grass doesn't absorb any of the waste the animals deposit. I can only imagine and dread what potentially 1,200 dogs pooping and peeing on a small artificial turf area would be like. I understand that the Bureau of Environmental Services approved the artificial turf. I will recommend to the next commissioner in charge of BES that the Bureau reevaluate its understanding of the ecological values of plastic versus grass in stormwater management designs. Guidelines C6 develop transitions between buildings and public spaces. The patio adjacent to the makerspaces is not accessible. It doesn't comply with the building code and is not a good transition between the private development and the public open space, and that criterion is not met. Criterion B4 provides stopping and viewing places, and B5 make plazas, parks, and open spaces successful. The evidence in the record points out that the proposed overlook is inadequately sized for 1,200 units plus use by the general public. Evidence from veteran urban green spaces leader and advocate Mike Houck indicates that public access to the water is not desirable at this location, as it is provided in other more suitable locations as part of the overall Greenway framework plan. This makes the size and adequacy of the overlook even more important, and perhaps there should be more than one overlook, or it certainly should be larger. So that criterion is not met. B7, integrate barrier-free design, I believe is not met because of the makerspace problem. C4, complement the context of existing buildings. The proximity to the greenway, the scale, the width, and the height of the proposed southern buildings do not complement the context of the existing buildings. The findings state that at five stories and half a block, the building on the southern end is straightforward in its rectilinear massing. A wide recess on the north side provides a large area for outdoor space for the residents along the paseo. The rectilinear massing is straightforward, but I don't think it's congruent with or using or adding to the local design vocabulary, and that criterion is not met, in my opinion. And then 33851-100B2 approval criteria says all proposals must meet section 2 and 3 of the South Waterfront guidelines. One of those is to develop a cohesive trail system. I know that Parks is really desperate to get this trail built. On the other hand, this development is going to last for a very long time, and it's very important to get it built right. I'm dismayed that both Parks and Prosper Portland offered to provide more funding and that request was denied. The proximity of the developments, the Greenway at the southeast corner, would create the impression of private space intruding on the public's experience on the Greenway. The application doesn't celebrate the history, the area's history or character. Governor Tom McCall envisioned and statewide Land Use Goal 15 enshrined the Willamette Greenway as a treasure for all generations in the future. The city has invested millions to support that vision. This development would interfere with that and intrude private ownership into a public treasure. The Alamo Manhattan developers have declined offers of financial assistance, instead choosing to request intensities of uses and proximity to the Greenway, which would be detrimental to the Greenway forever. This criterion is not met. So in my opinion, the development should be modified by increasing the setback of the Greenway, especially at the southeast corner of the southern building, mitigating for the width of the southern building with a more varied layout on the Greenway, perhaps stepping back part of the building at the Greenway level. It should be increasing the size of the overlook or adding another, make the makerspace patio more welcoming, accessible and safe, and provide more significant step down to the river and Greenway on both buildings. The modification request, as I mentioned, that must be denied. So for these reasons, colleagues, I believe we should uphold the appeal and deny the application. And I realize that was a lot.
There we go. So that was thorough. I appreciate it. You made some excellent points. There were a number of things that raise questions about the future, and I appreciate you actually raising those items for the benefit of the future. I was intrigued, by the way, what you said about the railings and the safety and the ADA access. I am starting with the assumption that the architecture and the plans and the permits would be contingent upon meeting all of those requirements. That said, you made some good points, and I don't want to discount that in any way, but my personal view is I believe that those requirements will be met as a condition of the permits actually being issued through the Bureau of Development Services. I was persuaded during the last conversation we had about the setback, there was the question that seemed to have precipitated a good amount of community pushback on this project, the fact that the building itself does not step down to the waterfront relative to other buildings behind it. And of course, the clarification was put into the record that that's relevant to the zoning and what is legally allowed, as opposed to the specifics of a building in one area versus a building behind the building. So the building, according to the findings, is within compliance in that particular area. I agree with Commissioner Fritz's vision for a world-class greenway. I think there is room for people to disagree on what constitutes a world-class greenway or what it looks like. I believe that the findings indicated that they did meet the basic requirements for the greenway. The question of whether the public space is truly seen as public, I think that's a coin toss. I think there is a case that could be made that by virtue of the fact that it is elevated, that there are stairs, I'm presuming that the ADA requirements will again be met. There's no question in my mind that elevation could inhibit people from choosing to participate in that space. That said, I don't see the findings as necessarily suggesting that they did not meet the threshold per the findings of the commission. Long story short, while I agree with some of the aspirational aspects of what Commissioner Fritz just mentioned, and I believe the review that she requested for both the Bureau of Development Services, as well as other bureaus, planning and sustainability. I think there is always an opportunity for us to enhance or improve or reconsider the rules under which we make those decisions. But on balance, I still believe that the Bureau and the Commission got this one right. Commissioner Udaly.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm a little overwhelmed by the volume of information we just received, so I need some clarity from staff. What are the actual, what's the proper word, modifications that we're granting to this project, where they are actually deviating from our standards? Do you have a slide or?
I don't have a slide at my fingertips, but it's pretty, I can explain, I can articulate it. One is for the bike parking spaces to be less than the code. The code requires 24 inches between each space. They're requesting it to be reduced to 18 inches.
But didn't we also reduce it in a later
code
action? Yeah.
Correct. So in March of 2020, the revised bike code was went into effect, which actually modified the bike parking space to make it a by right standard. So right now you can go down to 17 inches in between bikes without needing a modification.
Okay.
So it was codified more recently. But this applicant is not under that code, the current code. They're under an older code. The second modification is to allow vehicle spaces to be stacked or in tandem without an attendant having to move the car at the back end. And those are typically done and they're assigned to a single unit, and it becomes an on-site kind of management issue when you have two parking spaces assigned to one unit. And that's the second modification, is to not require an attendant to move the additional parking space.
And that's it.
There is one more, and it's called an adjustment. And the adjustment request is to allow vehicles to access the parking garages off of River Parkway. This is, again, an old code standard. The current code allows access off of River Parkway. But since they're being processed under an older code, that adjustment was necessary.
So can you respond to Commissioner Fritz's concerns that they may not be meeting ADA standards or greenway requirements?
So for the ADA standards on the railing, is that specifically the one?
Railing and I think perhaps access to the outdoor area. I wasn't clear where the ramp was.
So there was currently not a ramp in the greenway.
Okay.
I believe perhaps what Commissioner Fritz was referring to was the plaza area in front of the makerspace has, you could only access it by steps.
Okay.
The applicant's recent revision, the railing was taken off and the grade was raised in the landscaping in order to not require railing. So there's not a difference in the plaza grade and the landscape grade to necessitate a railing. BDS staff hasn't verified that with a life safety reviewer. We would assume that their architects are designing a building. It will be, correct.
That's our assumption. But there must be some, there has to be some ADA access. So do you approach from the other end of the sidewalk or?
Yeah, so you would need to walk down Lowell where the grades become even in order to access that public space.
I mean, that's less than ideal in my mind, but I'm not terribly interested in hanging out in a courtyard outside of a random bit, you know, like it's not perfect, but I don't feel like the public is going to be clamoring to sit in this particular space. If the building is accessible, the businesses are accessible. I mean, I'll just say, you know, I actually appreciate the concessions that the developer made, that they didn't have to, that are more aligned with the kind of newer standards and better stewardship of the environment and public space, and I will support this.
Any other questions? Could I just ask a follow-up based on what Commissioner Udaly and Commissioner Fritz said? So I made an assumption, and I want to make sure my assumption is correct. So when this goes in for permit review, it will have to comply with ADA requirements, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, and what phase does that have to happen? Does that happens during the permitting process, I assume?
That's correct.
And the permit process could actually override, if they found that it did not comply with ADA standards, they would do what? What would they do?
The applicant would have to design, make changes in order for it to comply with the standards. And that might require another review, or if it's not significant change, then perhaps we could accept it. But my assumption is the applicant probably put something forward that could be constructed, but it hasn't been verified yet.
Commissioner Fritz. Thank you.
But the applicant's own revised illustration shows 6 steps up on one side and 7 steps up on the other. How could that possibly be within 30 inches? And even if it's 30 inches, with the landscaping, it may appear that the stormwater planter is actually solid ground when it's not. And you can do quite a damage falling down 2.5 feet.
So the condition I'm referring to, would it be helpful if I put up a slide? Okay, I see nodding, so I'm going to go ahead and do that. Oh, goodness, having some trouble over here. Let me exit it. Okay. Let me exit out. Share. Okay. All right. Can everyone see the slide?
No.
Not yet.
I'm sorry.
Stacy, it's Lindley. What are you trying to show? I can see if I can help.
Oh, I think I've got it.
Okay.
Can you see that?
Yes.
Okay. So we're looking at that Makerspace Plaza. Can you see my cursor move?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So I could toggle here. So if you can see here, the plaza, the grade of this landscaping in front of it, to my understanding, has been graded back so that it is within 30 inches of this plaza. When the change in grade is less than 30 inches, my understanding is the building code does not require a railing. So this is the area that I'm referring to that the applicant has redesigned to not require a railing by getting the grades to be even. I'm not sure if this is the area back here that Commissioner Fritz is referring to with these at grade planters and these raised concrete areas.
That's part of it.
Okay. So,
and then how is that? How, if that's the case that they've got 6 feet of dirt built up or soil built up for the planter to be flush at the front on the greenway, there's going to have to be a retaining wall at the bottom?
So, I believe the retaining wall is what you see behind the.
What keeps. what keeps all the soil from going out onto the greenway if that whole area is now filled?
I'm going to make an assumption that there's a curb here. I'm not a landscape architect, but I'm sure that this is designed in a way that could be built and not have the, I mean, because BES would not allow this runoff to occur within a public trail. I'm making some assumptions here. I've seen plans with similar design be approved and get through the permit process, but I have not confirmed and verified this specific revision.
Behind the benches on the left-hand side, that's certainly a drop-off area that's going to require a fence, a railing. Yeah.
I would assume you're correct, because that's definitely more than 30 inches. So a railing is not shown here. My assumption is a railing would be needed, or perhaps those two benches perhaps are a way to provide that barrier. That's something the applicant would need to concur with the building code.
Commissioner Ryan, first of all, Commissioner Uday-Lee, you do not have your hand up, is that correct, or do you?
No, I'm sorry.
Okay, Commissioner Ryan.
Sure, thank you, Mayor. And thank you, Commissioner Fritz, for such a thorough presentation. I am a little bit confused about process, so I'll try not to belabor that. I will say that I'm trying to figure out what changed, and I see the changes to the makerspace area was based on the feedback on the greenway and the access to the waterway. Is there a before and after since our last conversation 3 weeks ago or 2 weeks ago, whenever that was?
Is this a question for staff?
Yeah.
No, there was not. There is no revision to provide access down to the river. The revisions are limited to the addition of eco roofs on the eastern two podiums, changes to this makerspace plaza to add an additional access, remove railings, and extend some brick paving, and some changes to the plaza at Abernethy to make it more inviting. Those are the three areas of change that are proposed.
Okay. That's helpful. Based on our dialogue, there was disappointment with the lack of access to the waterway. However, they're in compliance with code, correct?
Correct.
And this is not the place that we get to change that code. That's a different conversation in a more systemic level, right?
Correct.
Okay. I just want to acknowledge all the people that have sent in testimony on this matter, and I've been reading it. So in this proceedings today, it's just about the vote. We don't have any more testimony and there's no more presentations, correct?
Correct.
All right, thank you. I appreciate that, and hopefully it was helpful to anyone that's listening. I don't have any other questions.
Thank you, Commissioner Ryan. So if nobody else wants to, I'll put a motion on the table. At this time, I would move, and I'm probably gonna get the exact legal language wrong here, but I would move that we deny the appeal and uphold the decision of the Design Review Commission to approve this plan with conditions.
I thought we wanted the second one because they have submitted modifications.
Spell that out for me.
Well, can we get that slide back up?
Absolutely.
I don't have my language in front of me, so I'm winging it. So I'll enter. Commissioner Uday-Lee, go for it.
Oh, so I thought that it would be the second one, because we're allowing the proposed applicant revisions.
Lindley, can we get clarification? I see what Commissioner Udaly is saying.
Mayor, if your goal is to approve as it was modified with the changes to the makerspace, the eco roofs, and the additional, the Abernathy Plaza, then you would in fact go with option two as Commissioner Udaly has suggested. And I wanna see a head nod from Stacy. Yes, correct? Okay.
Good, that's what I mean. That would be my motion.
Second.
There's a second. Any further discussion on the motion? And let me get back to my right panel, sorry. Commissioner Ryan, you have your hand raised.
No, I just forgot to take it down, sorry.
No worries. Lindley, please call the roll, and just a reminder, this would be a tentative vote.
I'll let Keelan do that.
I'm sorry, did I say Lindley? I meant Keelan. Sorry, it's been a long day.
Okay, I wasn't sure. Okay, Udaly?
Sorry, one moment, please. I'm not used to being the first.
And may I, while you're getting ready, Commissioner Udaly, I would like to clarify that whatever council does today is a tentative vote because we will need to come back with findings.
Right. Well, once again, I appreciate the concessions the developer has agreed to make. Adding a voluntary green roof and adjusting access to the public space may not be legally required, but shows a meaningful effort towards our clearly stated development standards. And so I vote yes on the mayor's motion. Aye.
Fritz.
Thank you, colleagues. So land use reviews are discretionary decisions, and by definition, that is a decision on which reasonable people can disagree, and we often do. So I disagree with the motion, and I appreciate both the staff input and all of the community input we heard. No.
Ryan.
Yes, thank you, staff. And I just want to say it's interesting for your first meeting to be a land use appeal. And I've learned a lot. And I really, really appreciate Commissioner Fritz's work. And I also appreciate the concessions that were made. I'm disappointed that there's no access to the water, but the middle one, was the one that we focused on, option two, and I will support this motion. Aye.
Wheeler.
I assume you called my name, is that correct?
Yes, sorry, Wheeler.
I didn't hear it, sorry. I don't have the best internet service here. So first of all, I want to thank my colleague, Commissioner Fritz, in particular. She is by far the most detailed in her analysis of these proposals. And when I hear what she says, that gives me a very, very good framework for the consideration of these proposals. And so I want to acknowledge that, and I want to thank her, even though, as she said, reasonable people can come to different decisions at the end of the day. Your work, Commissioner Fritz, is highly valued, and I appreciate it. I just wanted to say that. I vote aye. The motion carries. Today's vote is a tentative vote. As legal counsel had indicated, staff will coordinate with the prevailing party's attorney to prepare the final findings. Staff, is there anything else you need from us?
Mayor, I will step in. I talked to counsel for both parties prior to the hearing and identified with Keelan a date for coming back. That date, due to some holidays and the time it will take to revise these, is November 18th at 9:45. I'd like to confirm that with both Keelan and with the prevailing party's attorney, Dana Krawcheck. If you could unmute yourself and confirm that's your understanding as well.
Dana Kraftcheck, and yes, that's my understanding. Thank you.
Yes, and I can confirm as well that that time is being held.
Great. So I think what we will do is staff will work with the applicant's attorney. We will come back with findings for you on November 18th.
Good. Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you. I just wanted to note that I will put my statement into the record before, right after this. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. I want to thank our staff for preparing this land use hearing. Thanks to those of you who testified previously, everybody who submitted written testimony on the matter. Keelan, that completes our agenda for this afternoon. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mayor.
Very good. Thank you, everybody. Have a great afternoon. We are adjourned.